She is a senior research program manager in the research department of Clearway, Minnesota, where she leads several research, evaluation, and surveillance initiatives. Her primary interests include cancer disparities amongst priority population groups. Her research examines tobacco-related disparities among racial and ethnic minority populations, with an emphasis on community-based approaches to reduce the burden of health disparities. Her presentation is Waiting for the Other Shoe to Drop, Implications of FDA Inaction on Menthol Cigarettes. Joanne.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for being here. I'm Joanne DeSilva with Clearway, Minnesota, and before I dive in, I just want to thank my co-authors, Dr. Raymond Boyle and Dr. Dorothy Hatsukami, as well as my colleagues at Clearway for their assistance with this topic. So as Amber mentioned, I'm going to be talking today about the FDA inaction on menthol cigarettes. I have no disclosures to report. And today we're going to start off with a brief history of menthol in cigarettes, and then we're going to talk about what's really happened since 2009, since the Family Smoking Prevention and Tobacco Control Act was passed. Then I'm going to jump into some implications of FDA inaction, and I'm going to weave in some recent data on menthol cigarette use, and in particular some data that we have from our Minnesota Adult Tobacco Survey. So the first menthol cigarettes were on the market back in the 1920s with the Spuds menthol cigarettes. And in the 1930s, we really saw more brands coming on the market, like this one, which is featured here, Cool cigarettes, which are really marketed as when you have a cold or your throat is dry, smoke a Cool instead of your regular brand of cigarette. And then in 1956, we saw the first filtered menthol cigarette that came on the market with Salems that are featured in the ad here with a couple that's taking a nice romantic walk in the woods with their cigarette. From that, we saw a huge change in the 1960s and 70s, which some folks have called really the African Americanization of the menthol cigarette, with culturally tailored messages such as supporting the Cool Jazz Festival featured here and other images of the black community. There was definitely an increase in targeted marketing to African Americans. And this has continued for several decades and into the 2000s, where we've seen increased marketing to youth as well as other racial and ethnic minority groups in the ads featured here. So to fast forward a few years to 2009, when President Barack Obama signed into law the Family Smoking Prevention and Tobacco Control Act. As most of you tobacco folks in the room probably know, this is what created the FDA and gave the FDA Center for Tobacco Products and gave the FDA jurisdiction over the regulation of tobacco products. It also banned characterizing flavors in cigarettes, but did not prohibit menthol to be used as a characterizing flavor. It also set up the Tobacco Scientific Advisory Committee, which is a group of scientific experts who were really charged with studying the evidence on menthol. So in 2011, in March, the TPSAC came out with their report, and the report concluded that menthol cigarette use was indeed associated with increased addiction, increased youth initiation, and decreased quitting, specifically among certain racial ethnic minority groups, including African Americans. And as we know, the TPSAC report also concluded that the removal of menthol cigarettes from the marketplace would benefit the public health. At the same time, FDA released a statement saying that the receipt of the final report and recommendations that TPSAC provided does not have a direct and immediate effect on the availability of menthol products in the marketplace. They then made an announcement saying that they would conduct their own independent review of the literature. 2 years later, in 2013, they completed their review and concluded that it is likely that menthol cigarettes pose a public health risk above that seen with non-menthol cigarettes. At the same time, they also issued an advance notice of proposed rulemaking on menthol cigarettes and asked the public to provide input on the issue. After some lobbying, the comment period was extended, and over 174,000 comments were received. Those were just the ones that were submitted online. Many thousands more were submitted in writing. And the FDA staff does have to review all of the comments that have been submitted, hopefully some of these by folks sitting around the table here today. Just this year, FDA issued proposed regulations on e-cigarettes and other tobacco products, including cigars. However, there was no mention of flavors in the proposed ruling. Also, RJR and Lorillard sued FDA on the grounds that members of TPSAC had conflicts of interest. And just this past summer, Judge Leon ruled against the FDA, sided with the industry, saying that there were indeed presence of conflicts of interest among three members of the committee, and that the menthol report was at a minimum suspect and at worst untrustworthy. We have confirmed that the FDA is going to appeal this ruling. So I've kind of breezed through about 100 years about what's happened with the menthol issue in a very short amount of time. And of course, we can talk about kind of, you know, the progression of menthol cigarettes in the U.S. all day. But I really want to take us to kind of where we are today and what are our steps for moving forward. So in terms of who's smoking menthols, we know that about a third of current smokers in the U.S. are menthol smokers, and that nationally our rates are highest among our youth, aged 12 to 17, our young adults, 18 to 25-year-olds, as well as African Americans. And while the FDA hasn't acted, the clock is ticking. And while the clock is ticking, progress is slowing, lives are being lost, and the industry is evolving. And I'll take some time now to go through each one of these. Giovino and colleagues looked at data from the National Survey of Drug Abuse and Health from 2004 and 2010. In this graph, menthol smokers are represented in blue, and non-menthol smokers are represented in red. As you can see, from 2004 to 2010, there's been a significant decrease in non-menthol smoking among adolescents. However, you can see the blue line hasn't changed much, and that menthol use has remained relatively stable. This led the authors to conclude that the uptake of menthol cigarettes compared to non-menthol cigarettes has really slowed progress in reducing the prevalence of smoking among adolescents. We've also seen something similar with our Minnesota data. So this is data from the 2014 Minnesota Youth Tobacco and Asthma Survey that was just released last week. And when we look at the percent of Minnesota high school smokers who usually smoke menthol cigarettes, we can see the rate has more than doubled between 2000 from 19.9 to 44.3 in 2014. I should also mention that the decline from 2011 to 2014 from 47 to 44% was a non-significant decrease. So we know that our youth are initiating with menthol, but we're also concerned about the lives that are being lost for those who are unable to quit. This is a table from the Levy study that simulated what would happen if menthol was banned in the U.S. So I know that there's a lot of numbers and they might be a little bit hard to see, but they essentially looked at smoking attributable deaths and deaths that could be averted under three different scenarios, ranging from a 10 to a 30% change in initiation and cessation. And what they projected was that if menthol was banned in the U.S., that by 2050, somewhere in the range of 323,000 to 633,000 deaths could be averted. And I know this is a huge number, and it feels like 2050 is far off into the future, but I do want to remind you that it's been 5 years since the act was passed. And if we assume a linear trend and take an average, that's approximately 2,000 to 4,500, depending on which scenario you look at, smoking attributable deaths that could have been averted in the last 5 years alone. And we know that while all of this is going on and the clock is ticking and we're waiting for the FDA to act, of course, the industry is evolving. Here is a recent article from the Washington Post that highlights the potential buying of Lorillard by Reynolds in the order of $27 billion. Now, the Federal Trade Commission is still reviewing this deal, but it would mean that Newports, which are currently Lorillard's brand, would move to RJR, and Newport holds the largest share of menthol cigarettes in the U.S. In addition to menthol and cigarettes, we also know that menthol-flavored little cigars and cigarillos have come on the market and have really proliferated in the recent years. And we also know that e-cigarettes have come in the market in the recent years, and that now each of the three big tobacco industries each have their own brand of e-cigarettes. So MarkTen, which is affiliated with Altria Philip Morris, Vuse, which is RJR's brand, and Blue, which is Lorillard's brand. And I think it's interesting to note that each of these e-cigarettes are available in menthol flavored. And because these products are new, we really don't know how e-cigarettes are going to impact menthol smokers. So we started to look at some of this with our data from the 2014 Minnesota Adult Tobacco Survey. And in Minnesota, about a quarter of adult smokers are using menthol cigarettes. Of those who are using menthol cigarettes, 73% reported ever use of e-cigarettes. But only about a quarter reported that they used e-cigarettes within the past 30 days. In addition, of those that used e-cigarettes in the past 30 days, about a third reported using specifically menthol-flavored e-cigarettes in the past 30 days. Another third reporting some other flavor, and the last third reporting no usual flavor. And when we asked folks for their reasons for using e-cigarettes, 68% said that they were using e-cigarettes because they wanted to try to quit smoking. We also asked menthol smokers what would they do in the event that menthol cigarettes were banned in the U.S., and about 50% said that they would quit smoking. Of those who said that they would not quit smoking, about half said they would switch to non-menthol cigarettes, and another quarter said they would switch to menthol e-cigarettes. The rest said that they would maybe switch to another tobacco product that was in menthol, or they would try to get their cigarettes elsewhere, such as abroad. So I think this raises a lot of questions about the impact of e-cigarettes on menthol smokers. Will e-cigarettes help menthol smokers quit? Will they provide hope for those menthol smokers who've had a hard time quitting? Or is it a slippery slope, and will e-cigarettes promote dual use? Will non-menthol flavored e-cigarettes promote cessation because a significant number are also using other flavors? Or will menthol flavored e-cigarettes promote youth initiation? So this raises lots of questions that we need answers to, and more research is needed to help us answer some of these. So that's a little bit about kind of where we are now in terms of menthol use and how it intersects with some of the other products that are on the market. But in this last segment, I really want to talk about what we can do right now. So, of course, as citizens, we can take action, and we can submit comments to the dockets when FDA proposes rules. They've also put out these documents that really provide guidance as to how citizens can really participate in the regulatory process. And I think regardless of whether or not dockets are open, we can still put pressure on the FDA and contact the Center for Tobacco Products and urge them to act. As a colleague recently noted, if we found out that our Oreos had cyanide in them, we wouldn't let the FDA wait for years before they took action. There would be a public outcry, and we would demand that the Oreos came off the shelves immediately. And we can do the same thing with menthol. In addition, communities can take action. And my colleague Mike Freiberg will talk about this in much more detail in a little bit. But I just wanted to highlight the 500-foot buffer zone that was passed in Chicago last December that really put the youth from our communities who were at the forefront of this and this buffer zone prohibits the sale of flavored tobacco products, which includes menthol cigarettes, within 500 feet of Chicago schools. And last but not least, regardless of what happens with our policy efforts, we can help menthol smokers quit. So we examined cessation outcomes among treatment-seeking smokers who were calling into the Minnesota Quit Plan helpline. And what we found is that menthol smokers had comparable cessation outcomes to non-menthol smokers who were calling in. However, menthol smokers were less likely to enroll in services. So we do have to do a better job of getting folks to make quit attempts and to call into evidence-based cessation programs such as Quitlines. On the other hand, while we know a lot about how to help smokers quit, there's been very little research that's been done specifically on helping menthol smokers quit, specifically African Americans. So to this end, Clery Minnesota funded a pilot study last year to Dr. Kola Okuyemi and colleagues, where they were examining treatment preferences of menthol smokers. So the participants in the study were provided several different products seen here. Some were in regular or tobacco flavored, and the others were mint gum or menthol e-cigarettes. And maybe no surprise that the menthol smokers in the study really preferred the mint or the menthol flavored products over the regular or tobacco flavored products. And an overwhelming majority of them, 75%, chose the menthol flavored e-cigarette to make their 2-week quit attempt, which was part of the study design. So this is just an important first step. Much more research is needed to determine whether e-cigarettes are going to be effective in helping people quit. But as I said, more studies like this are needed to really figure out how to help specific subgroups of smokers quit. So in conclusion, you know, I think I maybe brought up more questions than I answered here today, but there's lots of unknowns about kind of how FDA is going to act and when they'll act and if they'll act. We also don't know about the role of e-cigarettes and their impact on menthol smokers. And with all the changes in the industry that we're seeing and the changes in the marketplace, we really don't know how all of this is going to impact menthol smokers. But on the other hand, there are several knowns. We know that there's enough evidence. There's been several independent reviews of the literature now, and there is enough evidence to support a ban on menthol cigarettes. We know that while we wait, lives are being lost every day, and we know that we can put pressure on the FDA to act quickly. But in the meantime, local action is also possible, and regardless of policy efforts, we know we can help menthol smokers quit. So I'd like to leave you with this quote, and thank you for your attention.